I really think this technology could just scale at a way where basically the marginal cost of housing comes to zero. We just have like an abundance of healthy homes in regenerative villages and communities that are really aligned on what their vision and, massive transformational purpose is.
Well, Morgan, where are you today? This looks just terrific. I love the dome you're sitting in.
No, it's our first prototype of all ceramic geodesic dome. It's all made out of bioceramic materials and carbon fiber and hemp fiber, and we're up in Nevada City, California.
Nice. Got some good California sun coming through the windows behind you. Sweet. Well, I want to hear all about that story. We can just roll into it. It's great to have you back on Green Planet, Blue Planet. It's been a few years in between, and I remember back then you were just getting started, and now you're at a whole other place. You have, pre-sales on the dome. You have, you've raised funds. You're up and running. You're the first dome built. You're sitting in it. Today, I'd love to just really learn with you about what it takes to build a regenerative company from scratch, the way you've done until today, and kind of see, what's ahead of you. I know there's a big, bold, audacious vision of, I'm building all the way up to like 1 million domes a year. Drop in with us anywhere in the story where it feels most inspired today.
I don't think I can give a good blueprint for how to start a regenerative company. It's been a journey. I think it came from like a spiritual awakening, way back in 2005. I was essentially kind of following this shamanic thread, just experimenting with how to connect one world to another. And that led me to basically home building. And then for the last 7 years or so, I've been really developing kind of the material sciences and new manufacturing technologies that I think can really, really make a big difference in how we live. And I think that the key thing was really like how to bring a company into the world in the right way, right? So it's not just a for-profit company. It's like a platform for with the ultimate goal to build regenerative villages and help people live in a regenerative way, not just a different type of architecture.
Yeah, I mean the architecture is kind of like the vehicle to get there. When you say in a regenerative way, that also includes the way people kind of, I guess the ownership model is kind of also a bit altered. No, I remember us talking about that last time we were on the phone. Just walk us into like your first example of what's real right now. You built this first dome. How many more are coming?
Lots. So this is one of the exciting aspects of the technology is like it's for mass manufacturing. We're just injection molding ceramic components, and that can be done extremely rapidly in like a fully automated factory. So you're most, I think generally there's sort of a new type of home building companies that are coming up that are sort of all kind of productizing the house in different ways. And basically it's like panelized 3D printing or modular. And this is essentially a panelized solution. So we're manufacturing components that pack into a container and are easily assembled on site by owner builders or contractors.
Right, so the whole setup is basically like, would it categorize as like a prefab home in that sense for the those of us who are not in the building industries?
Yeah, basically, it's
Yeah.
prefab.
Yeah. Very, very cool. I mean, what I remember also is just that the ceramic dome is really a material that probably beyond the domes, we want to see a lot more of. Do you mind just explaining a little bit about, when you said you had the spiritual awakening and then you realize, okay, you want to bridge the worlds between kind of like building a new earth in a way that really works for, just also the mainstream reality that we're still in, right? So, tell us about those ceramic tiles. Like, fireproof, waterproof, earthquake, hurricane proof. Like, you know, when I think of buildings, I don't think that this is something I've even had in my head that that's possible. Where was that aha moment, and how did that occur to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we really started from physics first principles. So what is the most efficient geometry, materials, and method of manufacturing is pretty much what it comes down to for home building. And it happens that, you know, the geodesic dome is the most efficient structure. And there's a lot of kind of synergies that happen when you combine it with these geopolymer. This material, it's a bioceramic, which is a type of geopolymer, essentially. And when you're molding those components in a factory, basically those three things come together into sort of a triple, you know, exponential innovation. I think to have any kind of exponential innovation in home building, you have to address one of those physics first principles, and we're kind of hitting on all three. And I think really maximizing efficiency at all three of those levels. That's why we think there will actually never be a more efficient way to build a home. So there will just be a lot of these ceramic geodesic dome, geodesic, and then other forms that essentially are tessellated ceramic homes.
Yeah, so tessellated as in like you're setting them together with different kind of geodesic base shapes. Walk us through one of those images in your mind, because, you know, I find it fascinating when I watch your marketing material, your videos, like the future home is a home that is modulated out of these different geodesic shapes.
Yeah. So you basically have a ceramic composite frame system, and then ceramic composite panels on the outside and on the inside. And then there's an insulation cavity that's filled with a cellular ceramic material. One thing that people get confused a little bit about, and that these materials are sort of blurring the lines between what wood is a ceramic, an epoxy, and a cement, right? This stuff is bioceramic is actually really similar chemical composition to human bone. I mean, this whole thing is made out of like magnesium, phosphate, potassium, calcium, the same mineral composition as human bone. And when you bring these minerals together, it's like they have some of the properties of an epoxy, and that they are like a glue. You know, they form molecular bonds with natural materials. And they're like a ceramic, and that it's, you look at it under a microscope, it's like highly crystalline with covalent and ionic bonding. It has all the properties of a ceramic, but it doesn't require high heat like a ceramic. It's like fires at room temperature really quickly. So it is really great for like injection molding, which is what we're doing, injection molding ceramic components.
I love it. We've gotten like super technical. I don't know as much about home building as you do. So for me, it's like just seeing something like this be born in a way that is, you know, just so, just holistically integrated into the spectrum of what house building really means. Cause you know, it's such a huge industry. I guess we all, you know, have seen cities grow over the last, you know, 10, 20 years. If we've traveled and looked around, like, you know, lots of places, they're just kind of growing and scaling in size. Tell us a little bit about the journey of the company, because I'm really curious about, you know, you went from like $1.5 million in pre-seed, installed your first dome, you've made all kinds of pre-sales because people really are like curious and wanting into that market, right? It's small homes, it's affordable houses. And you're in the middle of, it's the middle of 2023 right now, you're in the middle of another fundraise. What's kind of your next 6 to 12 months of the company, and like, how can people that are, you know, really into that trend and see this kind of more regenerative and sustainable way of building, how can they partake in that journey?
Yeah. So over the next like 12 to 18 months, this is the kind of small dome that we've prototyped here. Next, we're going to prototype the bigger dome, which is about a 32-foot diameter. And so that's around 1,000 square feet. And then you can put two of the big domes together to have your kind of more standard size, you know, 4-bedroom, 2-bath, or like a big family home, essentially. And, you know, really what we envision is for in the future, communities will kind of populate the land from the cloud. So you come together in a digital space, start building relationships with the people you want to build a village with, and then kind of democratize that whole design build process, and ultimately get at scale, we can get these homes down to about $80 a square foot, and that and have, you know, a 95% reduced carbon footprint, and they're fireproof and hurricane and earthquake resistant, and the health benefits are kind of next level. I think there's 100% non-toxic materials, and the ceramics and the fractal geometry kind of work together in a way that it feels centered and balanced. I mean, obviously, you know, it's like being in a stone circle. There's a quality of feel in it that is really special, I think. And so that combination of like low cost, sustainable, resilient, healthy is pretty unique to bring together.
Yeah, it's fascinating, man. I love it. I mean, I've loved watching the journey over the last while and seeing, you know, that first one be built and just it coming to fruition from, like, you know, just like the vision itself of building, you know, villages or homes in a new way. Maybe, you know, Morgan, I'd love to just know about your journey with the company then just a bit more. In the last few years, you said it's been 7 years and kind of the process from starting at, you know, the physics of house building, home building to, you know, sitting in this first dome that's, you know, you're sitting in right now. What have been like the biggest adversities to overcome as an entrepreneur to just, you know, believe in your vision and like double down in the right moments?
Yeah, you know, honestly, I think one of the biggest things to overcome is just like confidence, like doing something that has such potential massive impact on the world. It's like you're questioning, you know, are you really the right person to do this? And are you surrounded by the right people? So it's like, as you go through the process, you start to gain more and more confidence in that you're bringing more and more people around that kind of sort of validate what you're doing and just continue, you know. I think the key thing was just like a deep level of care about what I'm doing. You know, it's like I had this experience and felt very clear that I was like on a path of universe, use me in the most efficient, you know, the best way you can. So like surrendering to being kind of a vessel for bringing something into the world like this. And so our purpose with GeoShip is actually the same as Buckminster Fuller's purpose. I can't think of a better way to describe it, which is just to make the world work in the shortest possible time through spontaneous cooperation without ecological offense or the disadvantage of anyone. So we're just bringing a company into the world that basically is executing on Buckminster Fuller's vision using 21st century materials and manufacturing technology.
So would you say, you know, kind of Bucky's the backdrop or the quote and, you know, that ethos, that kind of mantra is a, you know, kind of been your compass over the time? It sounds like it. Yeah,
I think so. You're just very clear that this is a beautiful thing to bring into the world, and people, you kind of push through the adversity or the doubters in a sense, or the doubt early on. And now we're to a point where it's pretty clear.
It starts to self-perpetuate. Yeah, obviously. I mean, that's the big joy about the entrepreneurial journey, right? There is at some point the pushing ends, and then there is like a rolling stone kind of effect, right? Or like gravity, you start attracting more and more circumstances and people that really allow this to turn more than from an idea into like a full blown reality. So tell me a little bit more about, you know, your best clients. Are you selling mainly to individual homeowners, or is that village vision and that collaborative kind of spontaneous vision already coming true in parts?
It's already coming true. The key, you know, most enthusiastic customers we have are basically having some sort of vision for like a retreat center or kind of an exotic hotel of some form, which is the perfect, you know, way for GeoShip to come into the world, because we have ceramic domes in places where a lot of different people can experience them, and then have this kind of digital village building platform so we can bring communities together online. They can set up a DAO and start to go through the design build process, the planning process. And that's, you know, where we just see, I mean, development today is kind of done in the same way that it was pre-internet. It's like developers and banks get together and buy land and build homes and sell them to people. And in the future, it's just that's more democratized. You know, the people come together first to really participate in the design and build of the village. And that's our vision.
So that means anybody who has a piece of land right now and has a group of people ready, they can already use the kind of the DAOs that you've set up, or they would form their own DAO based on the platform that you've developed.
That's part of what we're working through over the next like 12 to 18 months here, is we're partnering with some different organizations that are building different parts of that technology, basically a DAO, you know, DAO building technology, and also a virtual kind of design space, right, where you can get together with your friends and sort of collaborate on like, how do you want to lay out this village and sort of lay out your home.
Yeah, really cool. Well, you know, you're striking a really, really interesting point there, which I think, you know, you may be uniquely positioned to see, right? Like there's so much evolution and progress across so many industries. And then you look at something like building, which basically hasn't changed in its fundamental logics, right? It's like banks and builders come together, or, you know, city planners. And really, it's just a pretty simple math game, but it often takes or keeps out of equation the actual people that will live in those spaces. So it's overdue for a revolution. I think that that's very visible. How where in that revolution do you think we really are? I mean, if I look around in the cities around me that are growing, I don't think there's that thought yet to invest into materials that are like completely sustainable in that sense. Have you had some of those bigger conversations with you know, urban planners, or with, you know, people that are developing larger spaces?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we're at a stage right now with AI, everything coming, like the acceleration of technological progress is getting to a point where it's just, I think in the next 5 years, we are to a point where we're essentially, I don't even know where to start to describe it, because it's so different from the world that we're in now. Even in 5 to 10 years, you know, from life extension to instant virtualization of or materialization of a idea.
Well, try to elaborate a little bit. I think it's fascinating to see that through your eyes. I mean, we all don't really know what the future is going to hold, right? So at the same point, there is definitely like this kind of knowing, or this feeling, this intuiting of, okay, the world has been exponentially changing over the last, you know, 20, 30 years. And probably no one could have imagined 30 years ago where we are today in terms of telecommunication and connection. And, mm-hmm. you know, the brink of AI, we're talking about building from a specific topical background right now. But I think it's interesting to hear your version of, or your vision of the future there, Morgan. Feel free to drop in.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, well, I mean, from a building, from a home manufacturing perspective, I mean, to give you an idea of scale, like last year on Earth, there were 2.2 trillion concrete blocks manufactured, right, using technology that was basically patented in like 1899. So very old technology, but 2.2 trillion. Well, these geodesic components are roughly the same volume and weight as a concrete block. So if we apply 2.2 trillion geodesic components as like a home for every human being on Earth in like 1 or 2 years. You know, I really think this technology could just scale at a way where basically the marginal cost of housing comes to zero. We just have like an abundance of healthy homes in regenerative villages and communities that are really aligned on what their vision and, you know, massive transformational purpose is. I mean, imagine a world where that's the case. Like there's an abundance of healthy homes in regenerative villages with communities who are really aligned on what they're, you know, what gifts they're bringing into the world. So I think that world is coming. And at the same time, sort of this being able to speak into a computer and have it render an image or a movie, right? We're getting really close to like that Ready Player One reality, I think, is within the 5 to 10 year time horizon. And it's just, it's so different than what we're experiencing now that it's really hard for people to think in that kind of exponential. Our minds are more linear the way we think of progress, but when you add this kind of exponential curve onto it, it just, the amount of change is really hard to fathom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a fascinating subject, you know, linear versus exponential kind of imagination, because it is, you're right, it is really hard to truly imagine exponential expansion or growth, because our minds, you know, can maybe see, what if we did the same thing, but 10 times more? You know, that sounds exponential, but really exponential would mean we're doing a whole different thing to, you know, yield 10 times or many times more. But that's literally, I'm happy to talk about AI here for a little bit. We are, you know, in this very interesting window of time where we can feel it is changing the world, you know, and it is already changing the way we address some things. And maybe there are some dangers we should also talk about, but I'd love to hear from you, Morgan, like the world, you know, from an optimistic angle, I think it's changing everything for the better. But like, what dangers do you see with AI, and like, what kind of hopes do you have that it can really help us maybe make some of those shortcuts that you just mentioned, right? Like seeing just how we've been wasting building materials or resources, and how much more sensibly we can build reality. But what do you see on both sides, that, you know, the danger side as well as the positive hopes?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of see it as like, it's going through, it's almost like having a 7-year-old kid or something. Like what it grows up into is really, it is going to depend a lot on how we interact with it now and how we teach it and who's, you know. So I think when people are clear on what their vision is of the future and have a kind of pure mind and strong intention for what we want to build, that it's important that we interact with this, these AIs and start to teach them to create the world that we want to experience. And that's why I think, like Bucky's transformational purpose there, it's so accurate, you know, make the world work for 100% of humanity in the shortest possible time through spontaneous cooperation without ecological offense or the disadvantage of anyone. Like if we can have an AI that is really working on that with all of its abilities combined with, you know, robotic manufacturing factories, we can just, it's a really exciting time. Hmm. You know, I have a 2-year-old son too, that was, he's 2. So he was born a couple of years ago, and just thinking, you know, by the time he's my age, by the time he's half my age, right? 20 years. It's like the world is so, so much different than it is now. And you've got to kind of like skate to where the puck is going to be in the future. Right. So even with GeoShip, like we'll be in mass manufacturing, maybe in like the 3 to 5 year time horizon. And what is the world like at that point is kind of what we're, you know, zeroing in on now.
What kind of possible dangers or like, you know, kind of on the fringe of that do you see?
I think it's, you know, the dangers have been pretty well as spoken of in terms of, it's a tool, and if it gets into the hands of somebody who wants to use it to manipulate kind of how the future unfolds through all kinds of ways, then basically the only solution, the only counter to that is another AI. You know, there's no way. So you really got to kind of like lean into this thing and build ones that are aligned with the future we want to be part of.
The future of benevolent AI. Yeah, definitely. I think it's important to address that. And you're right. It, you know, everything we as humans have ever created are tools that make our life, you know, usually easier, but they also have dangers, just like, you know, you could break bread with a knife or you could hurt someone seriously. Tell us more about like your vision of DAOs and, you know, like making logics and contracts that are kind of beneficial for this, you know, synergistic unfolding, or as you said, like spontaneous acts of collaboration, right? Because right now, I mean, most people probably look at something like housing or something of like, how do I, you know, secure a spot of land, or, you know, how do I put down a mortgage, and, you know, how many payments is it? But really, this is just the old linear way of getting there, right? I know that this is something you thought a lot about. So maybe put yourself into my shoes. I still, you know, I've been interviewing and asking curious questions about this for a while, but I really don't know. What's the, not the hopes of DAOs, I think we're clear on that by now, but like, how do you see these next steps? Like, I think, you know, personally, many people might have to learn about what a decentralized autonomous organization really is at first, no?
Yeah. I mean, I think it comes down to like a way for us to kind of hack democracy, you know, government basically, and our economic system. So we basically have the ability, you know, through these DAOs to kind of code, you know, determine collectively how we want to govern ourselves and what kind of economic systems we want to use. And you can kind of think of the economic system as like a currency, right? It's like a way that the community sees the world. So we can actually code currencies that kind of help us focus our attention on the things that we want to create more of, right? Rather than, you know, the current debt-based currencies, you're basically focusing on a measure of separation in a sense. So I think there can just be really profound shifts in the way that we connect with one another and sort of perceive the world around us with that ability to code new forms of government and economic systems. I think ultimately those, you know, I don't know if you've looked at the work of like Balaji Srinivas, but he published a book last year called The Network State. And it's basically laying out this future of communities eventually, you know, forming online communities that eventually start to crowdsource physical land and have sort of archipelagos, you know, villages, and eventually have diplomatic recognition from existing nation states. So this is like the way that new countries will form, you know, ultimately, new currencies and new countries. It's really putting out the tools, creating the tools for people to do that. And for there to be sort of some competition with it, basically. Think of it like an infinite frontier. And that's, this really gets down to kind of why the core of why GeoShip. You know, for me, it was like when I left and spent 7 years kind of sailing all around the Pacific and traveling around the world, I was kind of exiting the system. Like I knew I did not want to participate in that system, that I saw kind of saw the structural violence and things that are happening kind of just based on the way that society works. So now as people exit, if we can kind of lower the barriers to exit and then give people the tools to create something new that others can opt into, that's really would be a big change for the future when you have lower barriers to exit and new ways for people to create something that others can opt into.
Right. Yeah. Right now I feel like we, you know, we're in this in between where it's visible. We can imagine it, more and more people talking about it. You know, yesterday, actually, I'm in Canada at the moment again. And yesterday I saw, I guess it was urban art as a statement, or at least a reflection on current times. It's the word freedom spelled with a double O. So free doom and an upside down question mark. On like, I think it was a 7-Eleven that was, you know, went out of business. And basically there's like a turnaround in the lot, you know, whatever it turns into, it might turn into a housing complex, not a geodesic dome, definitely not ceramic tile, but you know, the word freedom and then, you know, question mark, right? Are we in those times of freedom actually, or is it still kind of doomsday reality, right? So like what you're saying, the exiting of society as we know it, you know, has maybe become more and more a thought that many people are thinking about, is like, how do we even exit this specific game, and how do we play the infinite game together? But I do think, you know, it's easy for a lot of people to get lost in that. It's easy for me to get lost in that, in like, where are we on those timelines of change really? And like, is it ever going to really be possible to create currencies and networks that are actually, you know, kind of superior to the federal banking system or the, you know, the structures that we're currently kind of, you know, calling our grid, calling our matrix, calling that kind of system in which we're existing, right? What do you think is needed most to actually form healthy DAOs?
Well, I mean, there's some basic technologies that are being developed and kind of starting to emerge now. And I think at this point, the technologies are pretty much there. And it's really people learning how to engage with them, right? And kind of with GeoShip, I think we're at kind of a nice addition to those technologies, because you can start to see, okay, you need a house and you want to live in community. Well, you know, by engaging with these technologies now, we can start to basically create the future that we really hope for. You know, the one that's the more beautiful world that our hearts know is possible, right? It's like these technologies, I think, are at a stage now, and especially over the next 5 years, you know, where it's just a complete transformation.
So, I mean, on a technology level, I'm with you, but what about the human side of it? What do you think is actually needed from people to understand, but also trust and kind of lean into those technologies and these new ways of sense making, you know? What is needed most on a people basis? Like, if you look at your own personal growth over the years, or the peers around you, like, what's changing in the social fabric, and what are the skills and the virtues to take forward?
Yeah, I think creating enough space for yourself to just kind of unplug from the system for at least, say, like, longer periods of time, at least a week or a month or several months or several years, better yet. And meditation, you know, it's like, meditate, connect with the natural world. This is what, you know, humans are really here to do, I think, is to kind of be stewards of the garden. And as we start just disconnect, not trying to kind of keep up with the Joneses in a sense, like, just be who we are and connect more with the natural world, then we start, our minds kind of get to a place where we're able to use these technologies to bring that world into full, you know, manifestation.
Yeah, I mean, I love the simplicity of your answer. Just meditate and disconnect, right? Drop out for a while to tune in on a new level. I mean, you know, I think you're right. That is going to do the trick, right? It might just not be where everyone's really hanging out. I think, you know, you're very much at that cutting edge of, like, building, yeah, maybe even just building the swell for the next wave, you know? Like, there's a wave that's kind of starting to break. You kept mentioning the next 5 years. I'm, you know, very hopeful, very optimistic with you. You're building this wave. You're part of building this wave. You're part of the humans that picked up the call in the infinite game to remember, you know, new forms of government, new forms of logic, new forms of creating, you know, maybe information flow, housing, all of that. But for someone who is, you know, struggling to understand those concepts, what do you think is most needed beyond meditation and plugging out, as far as virtues go, when we come together in collaboration, when we come together to understand and kind of make these new steps real, you know? Because I think there's this picture of it's incoming, it's like it's arriving, right? But some of it isn't even fully graspable yet to most people, specifically when we talk about DAOs and blockchain. And it seems to be this, like, this idea, this, like, this will be the technological change. What is most needed, do you think, in that context?
You know, it's something that I still struggle with a lot, you know, which is basically just letting go of all of your kind of facade of the kind of character that we create in order to move through this world and just connect with people at a human level. So it's just, you know, imagine we were just, our ego isn't there. Nothing is holding us back, or if we just sit in circle with one another and are able to express how we really feel, right? It's just a level of kind of communication and trust in the people that who are kind of in the flow here with, to move into their, you know, emerge into this new experience of life that is more like the ancient experience, which is just, you know, we're just more connected to the natural world, and having these technologies to kind of help us get to that point, to kind of organize ourselves and to build. But once we're built and kind of living in these villages, or just like the kind of utopian future, you know, the future that you actually imagined, if you didn't have any limitations to that. And once it's there, then there's not a lot of, it's just about being and living with one another and in trust and communication. And I think that that's always the most challenging part of any kind of like community building, is just all the stuff that people have to kind of disassociate from, or the programming that had built up over the decades, to kind of get back to a more natural state of being. And we can practice that through meditation and retreats, and be ready for it, and start doing it. I mean, a lot of people are starting to do it.
And right. So that's the biggest maybe disconnect, you'd say, is it's just that, you know, rather than waiting for it in a distant future, it's like being in that way already right now, whilst maybe still being tied to layers of programming or separation, right? Which is, I agree, like it can be very challenging not to be tempted to say, you know, this is what's working now, like let me just work with what's working, and if the better future comes one day, maybe I'll be ready, all right? Rather than who would I be in that better future? Can I be that person today already?
Mm-hmm. And I think we're definitely having to kind of walk in both worlds at this point in order to bring the technologies and whatnot into experience in the way that we want them to be.
I think this is where one of the biggest challenges is, actually, is to like understand a lot of these technologies that are being used for either harm or just like, you know, continued addiction, or you know, like the fear of doomsday. And that's why I brought up free doom earlier, right? As like this social commentary sprayed on a wall somewhere in British Columbia, is to close that gap and remember that we're the builders of that technology. Even if, you know, I personally don't work at, I don't know, Google or Facebook, but that we actually have that power to build healthy and benevolent technologies. Because everything that's here right now could be used for tremendous progress, which, you know, it already is in many cases too. I mean, we talked about being able to talk into these little black boxes that we record this interview on, right? So closing that gap, I find personally, is one of the most challenging things in my head, at least, where I'm like, I have no idea how it's going to happen yet, but I sure believe technology can be benevolent and aid us in our way of simply being. Yet it seems like it's also paradoxically in the way for simply being human, like a crutch. No?
Well, and I think it's not that technology is benevolent or malevolent, but it's just our application of it. And we're just like, you know, still learning as a, if we think of this technology as like an extension of our bodies in some ways, we're just starting to learn how to kind of adapt, you know, and thrive in a way that utilizes these technologies, rather than kind of just the first experience of something. You just is like a little child, you know, you can get into it and get too much of it, and you don't understand what's actually, you know, supports your growth and ultimate place that you want to be. And I think it's just a learning process of how to use technology as more consciously.
Yeah, it comes back to our intent, right? Like, I mean, that's easily said, but then also quite interesting to see when we have large corporations on the planet that are, whose intent isn't as transparent, or whose intent is, you know, maybe very clearly separate from the natural world for, you know, extracting profit, rather than also run by humans that probably have positive intents of feeding their own families. But it's those kind of loops that I think are really hard to understand, at least for me personally, of like, how will they unravel? How will that, you know, kind of untie in a way that, we like peacefully step forward into a new place. Do you have any more insights on that?
Well, I think, Geoship is a multi-stakeholder cooperative. We've always used that description, and it basically means that an organization that is decentralized in who its stakeholders are. So eventually it's like customers, nature, as alongside of employees and investors will have, you know, sort of the governance, right? So you have perpetual purpose-driven trust and multi-stakeholder ownership and governance. And as companies come up, they're more decentralized in that way, which I think, you know, I really believe that these centralized companies will just not be able to, they won't be able to, quote, compete with the decentralized organizations that are thinking and being created in an exponential, with exponential mindset. And I think that, you know, it's just a transformation of the organizational, if you think of an organization as like an organism, that's also evolving. Our organizational structures and the way these things, you know, exist in the world. And they're way more efficient. Like the decentralized model is just much more adaptable and able to kind of outcompete the centralized ones eventually.
Yeah, I mean, your words in God's ear, as they say, right? I see a lot of that same incoming future. I think I'll just repeat, like, I personally don't know exactly yet how it's going to happen. In for the ride, that's for sure. And in for the ride of seeing, you know, these spontaneous acts of cooperation and collaboration, more synergies that are really, you know, ultimately lived by people like us who are simply awake to that call and who are, you know, maybe more willing and ready to try something different than to just follow the slopes or the grooves that were there before us, right? It's about kind of creating a new world rather than just consuming and partaking in a world that is already handed to us or dished up to us. I'm really curious, before we wrap here, you know, we're talking about your next raise, your next round. I think pre-seed was 1.5 million and now you're raising somewhere north of 8 million, I believe, for seed. Yeah, how far into that are you, and like who are you calling into the mix? You know, this is an exciting time for GeoShip to grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're just starting this week actually with the raise, and we're really looking for kind of the deeply aligned angel influencer types, and then we're also going to just open, once we have a few of those people on board, and we're really trying to not do VC, not do venture capital, instead have just humans on our cap table. So a few of those kind of influential angel investors on board, and then we plan to open it up again to everyday investors for as little as $100. You can own shares in a company that I think can have a massive impact.
Right on. Well, let's put our feelers out and call in that right aligned angel influencer that, you know, I hear you. There's something about the way capital moves that's a very important piece of the equation, right? And so the moment we're back at the same structures of banking, that's VC or, you know, private equity in specific forms, it kind of can't grow beyond that limitation, that way of seeing or creating the world. So I'm sure, you know, knock on wood, that person is out there listening. They're definitely out there already. So thank you so much, Morgan, for your time again. I'm going to, you know, keep watching the progress of GeoShip and can't wait to maybe in Nevada or, you know, wherever the next ones are built to step into one of those domes and experience it. You definitely have for those of you that watch the video, a fantastic backdrop there. I love the way it looks and feels around you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Julian. We're in Nevada City, California. So next time you're through, definitely come by.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for your time today, Morgan.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, man.